wow. So I have to start off by saying, wow, this has been quite an education. I am so grateful that I'm here. I was sharing with the sister, I'm sorry, yes, I'm Dulaine Smith. This is Natasha. We work together at the ACLU in Northern California. But it's been, I think I was 10 years old the last time I was here. And the last time I was here, this was the Black Panther Party headquarters.
Yeah.
And I lived across the street in a little White House right across the street, 4211 Grove Street at the time. And I was so curious. I was like, wow, I need to go over there and see what's going on. And I was so well received. And it was so different than what I heard in the media. You know, I was like, wow, you mean they're not bad people? And it was just amazing because it was really the beginning, the genesis for me to really understand what community is, what it means to really be an activist for social justice and civil rights. So it's just interesting that I am here again after all those years, and again getting enlightened. So I'm really grateful for all the words, everything that you've shared this evening that continues to enlighten me. And as Dr. Ramona Tasco has said, I am a follower, and I know leaders, and I'm also a leader. So I'm going to go back and definitely share, and I have. When I first came to one of the town hall meetings, I went back to the ACLU and said, okay, what are we doing? What can we do about this matter? Because at the time, the ACLU was in flux, or in transition. We didn't have a permanent executive director, and it was holiday time. A lot of people were just not there. We didn't have a really important position filled, and that was the police policies director. That person was not in place at all, who would normally be on the forefront of this Oscar Grant issue. But I was there. And I went to my boss, Natasha, and I said,
colleague,
and I said, what can we do? Got to do something, because I can't be here at the ACLU, a place that I've dreamt about and thought, hey, I've seen you know, the ACLU on the forefront of so many issues, and not say anything. And she said, let's you then go ahead and say it. Say whatever was on your heart and was on your mind. So in our meeting, I was able to talk to our interim executive director, and we really got some things started in that meeting. So I'm really, really grateful that our then interim executive director, John Crew, was able to provide some direction at that time to all of the groups and organizations that he could reach out to at that time. So, and we are continuing to monitor and see where we can make a difference. So again, I'm very happy to be here. And here on the issue of the death penalty, it's interesting, the various causes that can come together and have come together at this particular time. The financial storm that we found ourselves in has made for some interesting friends. It is important to seize the moment and take advantage of every opportunity. And Mr. Riles, you're absolutely correct that about your statistics around the death penalty and the cost. And that is getting a lot of people's attention right now, is the cost of the death penalty. And Natasha is going to talk more about those details, the statistics involved, the cost involved, but also what it really means to us as a community to have the death penalty in place and how we can really make a difference right now in Alameda County. And that's what our focus is Alameda County. So I'm going to turn the mic over to Natasha so I can hang on to it.
I'll give it back, I promise. So thank you for your time, and thank you to Minister Muhammad for inviting us to speak. We want to introduce you to the Alameda County Coalition for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. The goal of our coalition is to end the death penalty right here in Alameda County. You probably are aware of the racial disparities in how the death penalty is applied. The majority of people on California's death row are people of color. 36% are African American, which is 5 times the number of African Americans in California's population. The death penalty is used much more frequently when the victim of murder is a white person. It is 3 times more likely to be used than if the victim is African American, and 4 times more likely than if the victim is Latino. And that's true even though the vast majority of murder victims are in fact people of color. The really sad, tragic reality in California is that most murders aren't even solved, and especially most murders in which the victim is a person of color go unsolved. Really, bottom line, the death penalty is the most dramatic example of the ways in which our criminal justice system simply puts a higher value on white lives. Yeah. So as sad as that is, it's probably not really news to you. What may be news to you is news to most people that Delaney and I talk to is that Alameda County is one of the most aggressive death penalty counties in the state of California. We rank third statewide for the highest number of people on death row, and that's even taking into consideration per population and the number of murders that occur. And as Wilson referred to, the death penalty costs us much more than the alternative of simply sending people to prison. Death penalty trials cost the local county more money. Each death penalty trial costs at least $1 million more than a trial seeking permanent imprisonment. And did you know that there is a death penalty trial going on right now in this county, even though we are laying off state workers, public defenders, police officers, sheriffs? We are still wasting money on the death penalty right now in this county. And that's money that we could be using for other things like, hey, maybe solving some of those murders that are going unsolved. So those are the basic facts and figures. I'm going to hand out some information. I have a postcard that's the basic information about our coalition. I have packets here that have much more detailed information, but I just have a few of those packets. But if you're interested, please let me know. I'll give you one. And then I'm going to also give you a pamphlet about a very important day of action on Tuesday. While I'm handing out this information, Delaney's going to tell you a little bit more about how you can get involved here in our county efforts. But very importantly, on Tuesday, we will be in Sacramento this Tuesday for a day of action to end the death penalty. And we're going because the governor and the Department of Corrections are trying to restart executions right now. With all the problems this state has, the governor is spending your money trying to find a new way to kill people. And they are having a public hearing in Sacramento, and we are going to say no. And we're going to say it at the hearing, and then we're going to cross the street and tell the governor personally. So we really, really need all of your help coming to Sacramento on Tuesday, if possible. And now I'm going to give the microphone back to Ms. Delaney.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So those facts and figures are startling, but they're true. And I want to kind of go back to something that was mentioned earlier by Minister Muhammad regarding slavery. Because it's interesting to understand the roots of current day implementation of certain things. And when it comes to the death penalty, there's a great article that was written on February 24th, this is during Black History Month, by Diane Russ Turney. And she's the executive director, a sister who's the executive director of the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. And I'll just read it in part. When one hears the term abolitionist, one automatically thinks of the courageous men and women, white and African American, who aided runaway slaves fleeing to freedom in the nation's northern states and Canada. A parallel abolitionist movement developed in the U.S. of the late 18th century, the movement to abolish the death penalty. Several were influenced by a 1767 essay authored by Cesare Beccaria on Crimes and Punishment, which says there is no justification for state-sponsored executions. The essay led to the death penalty's abolition in Australia and Tuscany. But such enlightened thinking did not apply to slaves. Death by execution was a significant tool in maintaining slavery in the U.S., no less so than in Virginia. As activist and scholar Angela Davis noted, in Virginia, before the end of slavery, there was only one crime for which a white person could be executed, but there were 66 crimes for which a slave could be executed. Had it not been for slavery, the death penalty would have likely been abolished in America. African-American abolitionist Frederick Douglass pointed out in his autobiography that in some states, slaves could be executed for trying to learn to read. Ebony Magazine quoted Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in 1957 as saying, "I do not think God approves the death penalty for any crime." Dr. King's widow, Coretta Scott King, said, "Justice is never advanced in the taking of a human life. Morality is never upheld by legalized murder." And then the article goes on to say that we Americans should honor abolitionists of the past and present not only, and the present, not only by remembering them during, which at that time was Black History Month, but by working to repeal capital punishment in all death penalty states. In their memory, we must forever renounce and reject this outdated legacy of slavery. And I certainly have been against the death penalty, even after two of my brothers were murdered. Oftentimes people say, well, yeah, mm-hmm. what if it happens to you or mm-hmm. your family? What would you do? What stand would you take then? Mm-hmm. And certainly I can say, as a murder victim, that I still am against the death penalty because I understand its beginnings. I understand that it's a broken system. I understand that it's unfairly administered, and it's something that we should end. One of the ways in which we can do that immediately, and a lot of people don't know this, is that the district attorney has the power and ability to stop seeking death sentencing in Alameda County. All he has to do is just do it. And if we put the pressure on him to do it, then it can absolutely be done. And if he does not do it, then we need to look at who's running for the office of district attorney in 2010.
Yes.
And we need to keep their feet to the fire as to what their position is and what they can do to end death sentencing in Alameda County. So the package that's been handed to you includes a resolution, and that resolution, if anyone here is a part of a group, an organization, a church of any kind, even individuals, we're asking if you can please sign the resolution, because we want to take stacks and stacks of resolutions to the district attorney's office to say, these are voters here in Alameda County who care about what happens or what you do regarding the death penalty. And actually, we've seen some results, and there have been some cases where the death penalty could have been stopped. And we think that we have made some impact on the district attorney. But as Natasha mentioned earlier, there are death penalty cases that are still on the table, several actually, that are on the table, and one that's actually being tried right now. So I just want to thank you again for your time. And Dr. Tasco, it's wonderful to see you again. You probably don't remember me, my husband, Jerry Sims. You were our doctor at one point. So it's just amazing to be here and to be educated and to try to give you information that I hope will be helpful to you and also helpful in ending the death penalty. Thank you so much for your time.
Sister Sombrellas, I'm going to ask Reverend Williams to approve reparations on the front of the agenda, not next Saturday, it's the 4th of July, but when we come back from that, which is July the 11th, because of the hour and time, and we're going to take issues related to the caravan of justice.
It's been spoken by two people, sir.
So we can partially cover you. Praise God. Thank you, Pastor, for allowing us. How you all feeling?
All right. All right.
We want to encourage us to focus. Keep your phone lines open. If there are actions that shall occur before we meet again for a Saturday meeting, we'll send them out by a text message, phone call, word of mouth, email. Make sure that Sister Vivian has your appropriate contact information, because if there's anything that occurs, and it can occur, as Dr. Tosco is saying, is the unions move, we may need to move with them. Or as some have mentioned, we may need to take a protest movement to a BART station to a neighborhood not so near to you.
Right.
So we may well have some actions in the next few days to weeks. So please be in constant contact with one another. Christoph is back, and they can put all the updates on No Justice, No BART website. And one of the things that we want to encourage you to do, we're on Facebook, at least I am, and just about every word that comes out of Facebook has something to do with this movement. We want to now find a way to promote and to project what we have. Caravan for Justice has a website that allows us to, and any others, to go in and take a look at what it looked like when 1,000 people came unexpectedly to the state capitol. When 500 came the first time, 1,000 came the second time, and when more than 1,000 came on the third time, and the impact that it left on the state's capital really is matchless. So again, as we prepare for Caravan 4, we want to unveil more of the issues that we are addressing when we go there. Surely three strikes is a primary issue. It was suggested to me by one of our activists in San Diego. Right now we're dealing with 9 Northern California cities. But Southern California is coming into the knowledge of what we're doing. And what makes us so special here is whenever there's a need in Sacramento, we don't have to make a 9-8 hour drive. We can get up there in the next few minutes and make our needs known and heard very clearly. So at a certain point, you will see a bridge between Northern California activism and Southern California activism. What my brother said to me in San Diego was, remember Prop 21. And I heard Supervisor Carson say in our meeting the other morning that they just recently visited San Quentin. And one of the alarming trends that they are seeing is that the inmate population is growing increasingly younger. So they're going in and they're seeing 18, 19, 20-year-olds who might otherwise have been under youth authority incarceration pending on what their charges were. But with the passing of Prop 21, you find that younger people were being incarcerated like adults and being incarcerated with adults. And I had the personal experience to speak with a lifer at Soledad or Salinas Valley State Penitentiary. And on both sides of that highway where that prison is, they told me that the one of the worst things to ever have happened was for them to begin to send younger people here. Because in order to survive, they've got to be increasingly violent or they become increasingly victimized. So either way, you don't come out with a better human being when you put a 17-year-old at San Quentin or a 19-year-old who would have done better at a youth authority or a camp to actually go through a process of rehabilitation. So, sisters and brothers, we want to thank you for your participation in the town hall. Give yourselves a big round of applause. We want to thank Chris Williams for allowing us the use of this facility. And sister, I didn't know Pastor Humphreys is here. Pastor Humphreys, let everybody see you. Of course, everybody knows our host pastor in Alabama. Schedule conflict, but I didn't know when you said to come here that we were in one of the old Panther headquarters. That makes this a good place to meet. So we're thankful, and we're thankful. Pastor Humphreys, would you give us a closing prayer?
Minister, if I could, just yes, one ma'am. Minute. I know that it might be tough for a lot of us to take off on Tuesday to go to the day of action.
Yes, we're going.
But certainly if you wanted to write some comments against how you feel about the death penalty and about the lethal injection method, you could email ACLU, you could email california@nodeathpenalty.org, and we would deliver your comments, or, you know, on the fly also, you could send it to the CDC, or you could call the CDCR. Right, and that way your comments would get into the state of California.
That's right. And from our 9 town halls, we'll be sending delegates from the various cities. So that would be from Oakland, San Francisco, Richmond, Antioch, Pittsburgh, East Palo Alto, Stockton, Modesto, and Sacramento, where we've been hosting these kinds of town hall meetings in every city. And those meetings are germane to the issues of the city, but they're also germane to the issues that we have in common. Inshallah, God willing, you'll find that these types of town halls will be hosted in Los Angeles, Las Vegas, San Diego, Bakersfield, Fresno, all over the Western United States. We're bringing our people together in unity, and these town halls are designed to get us an answer to the problems we suffered for hundreds of years. So please receive our brother, the pastor, and Reverend Gordon Humphreys to close us out.
Come on, let's pray. Our Father, thank you for this time today, for all that has been shared, and for all the life that we have received. We pray that we will be a stronger, better people because of what we share out. Make us successful in our efforts and protect all of us as we leave this place and keep us unified and strive for justice and for better people and for a better community. And it's today that
thank you. May God bless and keep you. Please have a wonderful evening.